Frank Muir goes into cruelty and investigates the humour of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
Come in, boat number 91. Come in, boat number 91. Your time is up. Come in. Oh. Are you all right, number 16? Now, Willie, said the primary school teacher. Willie, why did you kick Johnny in the stomach?
Because he turned round.
Man was in hospital, and the nurse came and pulled the screens around his bed. Then she got out a tape measure and started measuring him from head to toe and shoulder to shoulder.
He said, What are you doing, nurse?
Said, I'm measuring you for a coffin.
He said, but I'm not dead.
He said, just be quiet. Do you want to make the doctor look stupid?
Mama, I'm sick of going round in circles.
Shut up, or I'll nail the other shoe to the floor.
Mama, I hate Daddy's guts.
Well, leave him. Just eat the greens.
Mama, are you sure this is the right way to make a pizza?
Shut up and get back in the oven. An Irishman was sentenced to 40 lashes, but the more they whipped him, the more he laughed. Eventually they said, what are you laughing for?
Don't you understand? You're whipping the wrong man.
Nurse, I'm at death's door.
Don't worry, the doctor will pull you through. An out-of-work actor was delighted to be offered £5,000 a week to work on a new film. It's incredible, he said. What's the film called? It's a remake of Treasure Island, said the director. And you're playing Long John Silver. So I want to see you on the set first thing Tuesday morning. Blimey, for that money, said the actor, I don't mind starting on Monday. No, not Monday. Not Monday, no. Monday's the day you have your leg off.
A great deal of comedy depends on some degree of cruelty. From the banana skin upwards, most jokes are at someone's expense, and human beings have an unattractive but undeniable interest in the misfortunes of others. In the words of James Froude,
man is the only creature to whom the torture and death of his fellow creatures is amusing in itself.
This quality is nothing to be proud of, Seneca.
All cruelty springs from weakness.
But its unhealthy attraction remains, as Samuel Johnson observed in The Idler.
Scarcely anything awakens attention like a tale of cruelty. The writer of news never fails to tell how the enemy murdered children and ravished virgins.
The same point is made more succinctly in this definition by J.B. Morton.
Thrill, a fatal accident.
The interest in cruelty is there in all of us, but only in morbid types is there actually glee in wanton destruction.
Spring is here, a suppering is here. Life is skittles and life is beer. I think the loveliest time of the year is the spring. I do, don't you? Of course you do. But there's one thing that makes spring complete for me and makes every Sunday a treat for me. All the world seems in tune on a spring afternoon when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. Every Sunday you'll see my sweetheart and me as we poison the pigeons in the park. When they see us coming, the birdies all try and hide, but they still go for peanuts when coated with cyanide. The sun's shining bright, everything seems all right when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. La 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 notoriety and caused much anxiety in the Audubon Society with our games. They call it impiety and lack of propriety and quite a variety of unpleasant names. But it's not against any religion to want to dispose of a pigeon. So if Sunday you're free, why don't you come with me and we'll poison the pigeons in the park. And maybe we'll do in a squirrel or two while we're poisoning pigeons in the park. We'll murder them all amid laughter and merriment, except for the few we take home to experiment. My pulse will be quickening with each drop of strychnine we feed to a pigeon. It just takes a smidgen to poison a pigeon in the park.
Tom Lehrer. In this country, reaction to cruelty to humans pales almost to nothing compared to the furor which cruelty to animals provokes. Though there are certain sports in which an element of cruelty is taken for granted, here's an extract from Isaac Walton's Complete Angler.
Thus use your frog. Put your hook through his mouth and out at his gills, and then with a fine needle and silk, sew the upper part of his leg with only one stitch to the arming wire of your hook, or tie the frog's leg above the upper joint to the armed wire, and in so doing, use him as though you loved him.
No wonder he croaked. But nothing seems to stop the popularity of blood sports, though there is a right and wrong way of participating in them. Here's a report from Newsweek.
English country gentlemen often hunt birds, and no one objected when Sheikh Zayed bin Sultan, ruler of Abu Dhabi, decided to try his hand at the sport at his luxurious English country mansion. What distressed neighbors was that he used a machine gun.
But shooting is a sport fraught with hazards for the unwary. And I don't just mean the animals. Here's advice to ladies from The Field magazine.
If out shooting or loading for anyone, one should keep one's lipstick in one's bag. It feels exactly like a cartridge in the pocket and is easily slipped down the barrel with fatal results.
Mind you, the most bizarre things happen to people when they go hunting.
I was hunting upstate New York, and I shot a moose, and I strap him onto the fender of my car. And I'm driving home along the West Side Highway. But what I didn't realize was that the bullet did not penetrate the moose. It just creased his scalp, knocking him unconscious. And I'm driving through the Holland Tunnel, and the moose woke up. So I'm driving with a live moose on my fender. And the moose is signaling for a turn, you know? And there's a law in New York State against driving with a conscious moose on your fender Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. And I'm very panicky. And then it hits me. Some friends of mine are having a costume party. I'll go. I'll take the moose. I'll ditch him at the party. It wouldn't be my responsibility. So I drive up to the party, and I knock on the door. The moose is next to me. My host comes to the door. I say, hello. You know the Solomons. We enter. The moose mingles. Did very well. Scored. Some guy was trying to sell him insurance for an hour and a half. 12 o'clock comes. They give out prizes for the best costume of the night. First prize goes to the Berkowitzes, a married couple dressed as a moose. The moose comes in second. The moose is furious. He and the Berkowitzes lock antlers in the living room. They knock each other unconscious. Now I figure here's my chance. I grab the moose, strap him to my fender, and shoot back to the woods. But I got the Berkowitzes.
Woody Allen. Cruelty is not only applied with guns and weapons. There's some truth in the old saying that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. On the other hand, words can be pretty painful. Everyone must have suffered a tongue-lashing at some point in their lives, and people in the public eye have got used to the barbs of licensed or self-appointed critics. Here's Fred Allen on the star of the Ed Sullivan Show.
Ed Sullivan will be around as long as someone else has talent.
Mrs. Patrick Campbell on Tallulah Bankhead.
Tallulah is always skating on thin ice. Everyone wants to be there when it breaks.
In fiction, too, the vicious sideswipe is popular. A line by Saki.
Waldo is one of those people who would be enormously improved by death.
But anyone who writes sets himself up as a sitting duck for the critic's venom. A review by Dorothy Parker.
This is not a novel to be tossed aside lightly. It should be thrown with great force.
And part of a review of a stage comedy by Robert Benchley.
Some laughter was heard in the back rows. Someone must have been telling jokes back there.
It's very difficult to apply to such attacks. And when you're dead, it's impossible. Any scurrilous allegation can be made about you. As John Arbuthnot said...
Biography is one of the new terrors of death.
But since the invention of television and with modern interviewing techniques, you don't have to wait for the victim's death before you start assassinating his character.
Mr. Harris, I hope you won't be offended if I begin right away by asking you a rather personal question. Yeah. Tell me, to what extent are your recent actions motivated by self-interest?
Well, I do feel
that I'm about to say have excited adverse comment in many sections of the press. Mm. Now, are you not at all worried by the storm of controversy you have unleashed?
No, I'm not. I feel that.
You're trying to say, then, Mr. Harris, in so many words, that the hornet's nest you have stirred up is nothing more than a storm in a teacup. Well, now, if that is the case, I'm afraid you are going to find very few people who will agree with you.
My dear fellow, I'm afraid I just don't care. Yes, please let me finish my mind.
The public is, Mr. Harris, I think, entitled to a more detailed explanation than you've yet given. Would you care to enlarge on it?
I was about to try to enlarge on it.
Yes.
But you won't allow me to get a word.
I have a feeling, you know, Mr. Harris, that you're trying to sidestep the issue.
No, my dear fellow,
I'm
not
at all.
But I will
drop this particular matter for the time being and pass on to something else.
As you wish.
Now, Mr. Harris... Mm-hmm. There is a rumour, now gaining ground in certain circles, that for a man in the centre of public affairs, your private life is not, perhaps, all that it should be.
Really?
Now, is there any substantial truth in this? I'm going to be quite blunt with you, and in return I expect you to be equally so. So tell me, am I not right in thinking that you are, in fact,
I beg your pardon. I'm afraid I'm not...
And is it not also true that you are a lifelong member of the Communist Party?
No, I want to say right here
One moment,
now.
Mr. Harris. You've not... You've not yet answered my previous question.
I'm trying to.
Are you or are you not a practicing...
I'm sorry, my dear fellow. I must tell you right away...
I'm not prepared to stand here. Please, listen to me.
No,
I am only seeking a simple, straightforward answer to what I think you must admit is a simple and straightforward question.
I think then you must listen to me. Look, if I could only just try and tell you without being so... Mm.
Can we be serious for one moment? Mr. Harris, you know the purpose of this interview is to get at the truth.
Please, just allow me to say one...
What you are saying, in effect...
I haven't said anything yet,
and everyone else is wrong.
No!
Isn't it?
No.
I mean, I suggest you are deliberately trying to withhold information rather than reveal it.
My God, I've got nothing to hide.
Yes.
On the contrary.
Thank you, Mr. Harris.
Look, I'm sorry. I've never been so insulted in my life.
Peter Sellers... On the whole, displays of cruelty are only funny when the victim's someone else. And however charitable we all are, and however much we try to feel sympathy, we have all at times been guilty of giggling at others' misfortunes. It seems more legitimate to laugh if the victims are people you know nothing about, just names in a newspaper. And here are a few pieces from the press which pander to these instincts. First, from the New York State Medical Journal.
Among the side reactions of this mercurial drug, the most important is the death of the patient shortly after the injection.
And here's a saga from the Ely Diocesan News.
During the processional hymn, the heel of a girl chorister caught in the grating. Not wishing to hold up the ceremony, she marched on minus a shoe. Moved by chivalry, a male chorister followed, tried to pick up the shoe. Unfortunately, the heel was stuck firmly in the grating, so again, not wanting to hold up the procession, the chorister picked up the whole lot and continued up the nave. The officiating clergyman promptly fell into the hole.
And here's a headline from a New York newspaper.
Father of 10 shot dead, mistaken for rabbit.
We shouldn't laugh at that sort of thing, really, but we tend to. Cruelty, however, can have a purpose. We all know the cliché about cruel to be kind, and that can sometimes work. Here's an anecdote by John Aubrey of Dr. William Butler.
The doctor lying at the Savoy in London next the waterside, where there was a balcony, looked into the Thames. A patient came to him that was grievously tormented with an ague. The doctor orders a boat to be in readiness under his window and discourse with the patient, a gent, in the balcony, when, on a signal given, two or three lusty fellows came behind the gentleman and threw him a mat of 20 feet into the Thames. This surprise absolutely cured him.
Maybe it's the thought of that sort of thing that makes us all apprehensive when we go to the doctor.
Next, please. Come along, we haven't got all day. Come on. Right, drop them. Now take your trousers off.
They are off, sir.
So they are. In that case, your legs need pressing. Now, can you touch your toes?
No, sir.
Well, how do you wash them then, you dirty little brute? Come grubbing round my surgery with your filthy feet? Ugh. Well, if you can't touch your toes, your arms must be too short. I'll just have to let them out a bit at the elbows.
Thank you, sir. Yes.
Now, come over here. Now, take this bottle. You know what to do with it, don't you?
Yes, sir, I do.
Good. There's the ship, and I want it finished by Tuesday. And if you find that too difficult, you can put the ship in the bottle. Right, now. Now, can you read this card?
Oh, yes, sir.
Well?
It says APG XRI 8439 DMFRH.
It's from my aunt in Brighton. She must be out of her mind. She hasn't been the same since Mafeking. Right, well, thank you. Off you go, then.
But what about my checkup?
Oh, yes. Now, have you got a temperature?
Oh, yes, sir. 106.
That's a bit high. Better call it 98. Now, let's see. Breathing. Do you breathe?
Yes, quite frequently, actually.
Well, breathe in, then. Breathe out again. Breathe in. Blow out. In. Out. Faster. In. Out. In. Out. Keep blowing. Sorry I have to make you do this, but the electric fan's broken down.
John Cleese and Bill Oddie. There's a popular fallacy that suffering is in some way beneficial. That may sometimes be true, but it certainly shouldn't be used as an excuse for licensed cruelty. Here's an old English proverb.
A woman, a dog, and a walnut tree, the more you beat them, the better they be.
Apologies to any feminists who happen to be listening. Come to that. Apologies to any dogs or walnut trees who happen to be listening. Callousness to the suffering of others is unfortunately widespread. Here's an extract from a letter to the Evening Argus.
It seems there is consolation to be found in almost every situation. Near the Hove Hospital, I saw a young lady limping along with a leg in fresh plaster. She was receiving sympathetic glances from most passers-by, including myself, when an elderly man said, "She should consider herself lucky. Had she been born a horse, she would have been shot."
The school of thought which believes in the value of suffering also believes in the benefits of punishment. Bertrand Russell.
The infliction of cruelty with a good conscience is a delight to moralists.
Voltaire had liberal views on the subject.
The punishment of criminals should be of use. When a man is hanged, he is good for nothing.
Or when he's guillotined. Here's Augustus Kingsley Gardner writing in the last century about the guillotine. And incidentally, Jack Ketch's are hangmen.
Amateurs can see the operation of this celebrated instrument on a dog for 20 francs on giving notice of their desire to the officer a week in advance. Jack Ketch's of other countries have free admittance.
Nowadays, supposedly more humane methods of punishment exist. A report from the Coventry Evening Telegraph.
Murderers serving prison sentences shall be flogged once a year, a Conservative Comedy Councillor said. He told surprise probation officers, magistrates and social workers that the flogging should be carried out every year of the prisoner's sentence on their birthdays.
Flogging always seems a particularly cruel form of punishment.
All right, you three prisoners, line up here. You men tried to escape and you were caught. And as captain of the guards, the warden has ordered me to give each one of you 3 lashes.
Oh, boy, that's some of them.
All right, that's 5 down. This is a progressive prison. And the warden has said that each one of you can have a protective coating of your own choice on your back before you get lashed. Okay? Hodges, your face. What do you want on your back?
Cover my back with oil.
Okay, cover his back there with oil. Come on, let's go. Smear it on there, splash it on his back. Let's go. Okay, Hodges, take your punishment. Okay, now you, Wilson, what do you want on your back?
Nothing. Whip away.
Okay, tough guy, you asked for it.
That's one. And that's two. And that's three.
All right, Wilson, that's all. Okay, Cohen, you're next. What do you want on your back?
On my back, I want Wilson.
That was from the LP, You Don't Have to Be Jewish. But I suppose the worst forms of cruelty don't occur in prisons, but within the family. Domestic claustrophobia breeds many tensions. And then there are purely practical problems, like getting staff. Here's an advertisement that appeared in a newspaper in Syracuse, New York State, in the 1860s.
Wanted, a good servant girl to whom the highest wages will be paid. Having had great difficulty in procuring good help on account of the misfortune of having 7 small children, we will poison, drown, or otherwise make away with 4 of them on application of a first-class servant girl.
There's a lot of cruelty between husband and wife. News from the Daily Mail.
The husband's allegation of cruelty was rejected, but the judge exercised discretion in respect of his own misconduct.
As that case shows, it's not always the husband that's cruel. Wives can be just as bad. An epigram by Jonathan Swift.
As Thomas was cudgeled one day by his wife, he took to the street and fled for his life. Tom's 3 dearest friends came by in the squabble and saved him at once from the shrew and the rabble, then ventured to give him some sober advice. But Tom is a person of honor so nice, too wise to take counsel, too proud to take warning. Then he sent to all 3 a challenge next morning. 3 duels he fought, 3 ventures his life, went home and was cudgeled again by his wife.
It just goes to show that one should be very wary of interfering between a man and a woman. What appears to the outsider to be cruel may, in fact, be something they rather enjoy.
I ache for the touch of your lips, dear, but much more for the touch of your whips, dear. You can raise welts like nobody else as we dance to the masochism tango. Let our love be a flame, not an ember. Say it's me that you want to dismember. Blacken my eye, set fire to my tie as we dance to the masochism tango. At your command, before you, here I stand. My heart is in my hand. Ugh. It's here that I must be. My heart entreats, just hear those savage beats, and go put on your cleats, and come and trample me. Your heart is hard as stone or mahogany. That's why I'm in such exquisite agony. My soul is on fire, it's aflame with desire, which is why I perspire when we tango. You caught my nose in your left castanet, love. I can feel the pain, yet love, every time I hear drums. And I envy the rose that you held in your teeth, love, with the thorns underneath, love, sticking into your gums. Your eyes cast a spell that bewitches. The last time I needed 20 stitches to sew up the gash that you made with your lash, as we dance to the masochism tango, bash in my brain and make me scream with pain, then kick me once again and say we'll never part. I know too well I'm underneath your spell, so darling, if you smell something burning, it's my heart. Excuse me. Take your cigarette from its holder and burn your initials in my shoulder. Fracture my spine and swear that you're mine as we dance to the masochism tango.
Tom Lehrer. Well, that spelt it for cruelty. Let's close appropriately with a ruthless rhyme by Harry Graham. This one's called Carelessness.
A window cleaner in our street, who fell 5 stories at my feet, impaled himself on my umbrella. I said, come, come, you careless fella. If my umbrella had been shut, you might have landed on my nut.
Next week, we'll be going into deceit. Until then, from Alfred and me, goodbye. Say goodbye, Alfred.
Hey?
Say goodbye.
Stop twisting my arm.
Say goodbye.
My arm like
say goodbye. Goodbye.
Frank Muir Goes Into Cruelty was written by Frank Muir and the producer, Simon Brett.